The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
Matt!
Media Productions. You remembered them fondly, and then they were gone. And now you want to know. Why It Ended with Robbie E. and Matt Coon.
Hey guys, it's hashtag Why It Ended Wednesday, and you know what that means. That means Robbie E. is here. That means the sexy, chocolatey, silky voice Matt Coon is here. And we are fresh off last week's episode with Marty Jannetty, which was one in the books and one we'll never forget. Will and Matt.
I think the Marty Jannetty episode will go down as one of the great interviews in wrestling history, and that's the feedback we got. It was by far our most downloaded show, by far our most feedback that we ever got on Twitter, and also it was our longest show. We learned a lot, and I think we showed people what Why It Ended is made out of.
Yeah, and you know what? I listened back to it, and a lot of fans tweeted this also. They didn't mind that it was, I mean, give or take around 3 hours of calling, and it didn't feel like it. I listened back to it, and the guy is so, and let me just say, he is, listening back, he is really the most genuine, nicest guy, I think. Do you agree with that?
I agree with that. I also agree that a lot of people said that his past interviews, he wasn't really understandable, or he rambled on, or he wasn't, you know, you couldn't really follow, but I thought he was just fantastic, and he moved in such a great way, and he definitely had some issues to bring up, but he doesn't seem bitter. He seems like a great guy.
No, and that's why, you know, I hope, I think it's hard to say a ninth shot, but I think he deserves another shot. He's too smart about the wrestling business not to be a trainer or an agent or do something to help out younger talent. And, you know, it can be number nine for him.
And we'd love to see Marty get back in the business and be a little bit more present. But something that I want to know is Robbie E., Why It Ended. Robbie E. did not wrestle this last weekend, but the Robert Strauss brand did. Tell us about your debut for House of Hardcore, Robbie.
The Robert Strauss brand did debut, and I did have a pretty sweet headpiece Britney Spears-ish microphone that I wore strapped to my ear that I walked and talked to the ring. And night one in Canada, I wrestled Billy Gunn, and night two, I wrestled the local guy. And there were great shows, as always. Tommy Dreamer puts on awesome wrestling shows in and outside of the country. And I am very pumped for everyone, you know, every Wednesday on Twitch to make sure you check out the House of Hardcore TV show, because you're going to see a lot more of the Robert Strauss brand.
And I'm getting a lot of great feedback about the Robert Strauss brand. I got texts from people inside the business who said, this Robert Strauss brand is a winner. And I said, of course, Robbie E's a winner, right?
Robert Strauss brand.
Hey, it's a character that comes very natural to me because it is me, and it's very modern, and no one's doing it, and I think it's going to take off, and I hope you fans like it. Please tweet me and let me know what you think of it. And follow me on Instagram at RealRobbieE to see the weekly videos if you're not catching them on House of Hardcore.
You don't want to miss this video, and something else you don't want to miss is our big announcement this week. Now, first of all, I just want to tell everybody, the show is not going to change. We're still going to have the same show, the same quality, and as you see, the guests get bigger and bigger. But for those that want a little bit more, we started a little something else, haven't we, Robbie?
We have officially started a Patreon page, which means you guys, you know, get to help out the show, but in return, you get a lot of cool stuff. Tell them what it is, Matt.
Well, we definitely have a lot of cool stuff, and it's all available at patreon.com/whyitended. That's patreon.com/whyitended. But the most important thing is to support the show, because what we're trying to do is we're trying to bring the show on the road and also put together a really good StarCast panel and also make this show as good as it can for those who want a little bit extra. So we have started the Patreon page to do that. Now, for those of you who want it, we are loading up the Patreon with all kinds of extra stuff, and everything will be loaded up within the next 2 weeks. But go ahead and join the Patreon today. We have a few different levels, whether you just want to support the show or whether you want a full interactive experience. So for just $2 a month, just $2 a month, you can just show your support and you can support what we do. And if you do that, you'll get a shout out on your social media, our social media, and we'll give you a follow on Twitter and Instagram, and our Facebook page is to come.
And for $6 a month, you can be a good hand, which means you will get everything that the enhancement talent gets. But in addition to that, you will also get an early release, no later than Friday, of the new episodes we have coming out. As soon as it's done, you'll have it. And they're ad-free episodes, which is pretty cool.
So we've got a brand new show going up on Wednesday, but if you order the Patreon at that level, you can get it on Friday. Now, all the other goodies are going to be loaded up within the next couple weeks, but go ahead and join today. Spots are limited for each level. You can go up to being a heater for $10 a month, and you get more than the great picture of Robbie that we have on here. You got to see it to believe it, guys. If you're a heater, you know, you're our heater. You back us up, you make us look good, and you enable us to do our job. We're going to give you some more added value. Everything else that you get from the previous levels, the ad-free episode that comes out early, but you're also going to get access to our unedited, uncensored archive episodes. Because people might not know this, but some of our interviews go 2.5 hours, 3 hours, and not just Marty Jannetty, and we edit it down to 45 minutes. If you become a heater, you will get access to the full interviews with Robbie and me getting all the answers from everybody.
But if you want to get something a little more like I like to, I think you might be able to be a headliner. And by being a headliner, you get everything we just mentioned, plus a shout out on the show as a supporter. So we are actually going to say your name on our show. Plus, you're going to get one bonus show per month.
A bonus show just for our patrons, and that's just for you guys for a month, and then we'll release it to everybody else. Or for less than $20 a month. That's just pennies a day, and you can get the best value and our best value on the Wyatt Ended Patreon. You can become a GOAT, G-O-A-T, the greatest of all time. You are supporting the show more than anyone has ever or will. Without you, there's no bar to reach for, no standard to live up to. You are the greatest of all time. And beyond the satisfaction of helping out the hardworking crew of White Ended, you get the shout out. You get the early release of ad-free episodes. You also get the unedited, uncensored archive episodes. You'll get the one bonus show per month. You'll get the shout out on the show. You'll get the shout out on the show, and we'll even throw out your social media handle. But we're going to do one live video interview a month. So of our interviews that we do, we're going to video one of them, and you're going to get to watch us do it live. You're going to see how Robbie and I communicate, how we react to everything, how much I smoke, how many push-ups does Robbie do. This is available to patrons only for a month, after which it'll go to the general public. But for you guys, you're the only ones who will get this for that month. And not only that, this is the upper level, the greatest of all time. You get to get on our show and ask a guest a question. You can ask the guest a question, or you can ask Robbie a question. If you're really desperate, you can ask me a question. But you'll get to get on the show if you become a patron of Why It Ended. All you have to do is go to patreon.com/whyitended. Those of you who jump on this Patreon deal, the new episode for next week will be up on Friday, but all the other stuff will be loaded up in the next 2 weeks. And for those of you who don't want to sign up to the Patreon, you're still our favorite listeners in the world, and we're going to keep working hard to bring you the best show possible. So lots of exciting stuff going on here. We got our Patreon site. We have the Robbie Strauss brand, but now we have a pretty great interview with Jimmy Jacobs, Robbie.
Yeah, this is going to be so cool. I'm looking forward to it because we're asking a guy questions. Granted, yes, he has done a lot of cool things in wrestling, but I think the coolest thing he's done is be a writer for the WWE. So we're talking to a guy that we haven't talked to before. We've only talked to wrestlers, Matt. So now we're going to talk to someone who's really been behind the scenes and has helped create some of the biggest stars currently in professional wrestling.
And I plan on pressing him a little bit on why he got fired. So I'm looking forward to this episode of Why It Ended. Coming up after this, Jimmy Jacobs. If you would like to advertise on the Why It Ended podcast and reach tens of thousands of listeners every week, males between the ages of 25 and 44, a lot of advertisers like to get, where can you reach them, Robbie?
Hey guys, you can email us at whyitendedmail@gmail.com. Come on, bro, just do it.
That's right, Robbie. Just email us at whyitendedmail@gmail.com. And also, guys, make sure to check out our new Patreon site, patreon.com/whyitended.
What's an email?
All right, guys, joining us now, we have the man who invented the list. You know him from Ring of Honor's heyday, and you know him from Impact Wrestling, former WWE writer and legendary wrestler, Mr. Jimmy Jacobs. How you doing, Jimmy?
Legendary. Wow. Yeah, I'll take that. I think you're overstating my importance, but graciously, I'll say yes, I'm a legend.
Hey, you know, so. Matt, we have had on, Jimmy, we have had on so many guys before, and I have never heard him use the word legendary. Matt, what are you in love with Jimmy Jacobs, bro?
Well, he wears nice earrings and eyeliner and stuff. You know, it's a confusing time for me.
I've never heard an intro with that much excitement before from you. That's all I'm saying.
I appreciate it. I'm excited that anybody's excited about me. So.
Hey, bro. Well, thanks for doing this. I know me and you kind of know each other. We've been on shows together before, but not that great. But you're a super cool dude, and I appreciate it. And my first question to you is, when you were younger, did you like pro wrestling, or is it something you got into when you were a little older?
Yeah, no, when I was younger, you know, my brother was into it. I have an older brother who's 3 years older than me, and he liked it. My first memory of it is probably, I think it's watching it at my grandma's house when, like, Mr. Perfect shot that perfect game of pool, I believe, is my first memory.
But how old are you?
I'm 34 now.
Okay, I'm 34 too. So same kind of thing. And same with me. My older brother liked it, and that's how I got into it. So I think me and you are going to have a lot of similarities.
And there's a lot of parallels here because – Jimmy broke in at a very, very young age. You started at PWW, but just helping out and stuff, including doing color commentary at age 14. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, so, my older brother, he wanted to go to wrestling school. He wanted to go to, like, Shawn Michaels school and Les Thatcher school. But one Saturday morning, I was watching, like, Superstars, and I'm flipping through channels during the commercial break. And on public access, I see this independent wrestling show, and I had no idea what independent wrestling was. And I was like, oh, my God, and I recorded it. And we ended up getting in contact with this local company, which wasn't very good. You know, my brother would have been much better off going to Shawn Michaels school than being trained by, you know, local legend Scotty Z.
Yeah.
But it worked out for me because, you know, he went to the school and I tagged along with him. I mean, the first time I stepped foot into a wrestling ring was my last week of eighth grade. So that's literally probably 20 years ago, like this week, right? The end of May or something like that. So, I was 14 and I loved it, and I was ambitious as far as, like, I would just go to the shows and do whatever. I would set up the rings or set up the chairs. I had a video camera, so I'd bring that along. I started making websites for people, even though I didn't really know how to make websites, and I would do the music or do the lights or whatever needed to be done, you know, at the age of 14.
And this guy, the wrestling school, was cool with you starting at 14? Because, like, by me, I had to wait till I was 16 and get parents' signature and stuff.
So I wasn't training at 14. I was just hanging around at 14. When I was 15, there was another company that my brother was sort of had sort of transitioned to. You know, you first start off, you have kind of like your quote-unquote, like, your home promotion, right?
Yeah.
So, right.
Of course.
So, you got the AIM instant messenger name, like, you know, Jimmy Jacobs, LSWO.
PPW. So,
right, exactly. So, you know, I would just go to the shows and I would do literally, like, anything they needed. And one week, like, one of the referees was going to be on vacation. And I said, oh, I could referee. I could do that. So I bought myself a referee shirt. And on March 6, 1999, I refereed on my first show. And just from there, like, as soon as the door was cracked open, I barged through. I made myself a website. I started, like, getting booked other places. You know, the other guys in that local company, they weren't working anywhere else. Like, I just started going everywhere and doing everything. And I was trying to convince my parents to allow me to train and be a professional wrestler. And they weren't keen on it. But I was just going with my brother for his training. And then I just started getting in the ring and I started training. It wasn't very good training, but it was training. And on May 1st, 1999, I had my first match.
And what's the deal with your brother? Did he end up, how long did he end up wrestling for?
Oh, just a couple of years, you know, and really, he was going at it strong maybe for a year and a half or two. But just, it's funny how life works. I grew up,
you know, I was kind of like my brother was the sort of troublemaker, and I was like the smart kid as far as the siblings goes. And I was like really into math when I was a kid, like into math. Like I was in all the advanced math classes, and I remember like going up to the math teacher when I was in second grade and like shooting math problems at her. And my brother just really, really loved pro wrestling. I remember he asked my father when he was like in first grade or something like that. My brother asked my dad, "Hey, Dad, you know, why do I need to learn reading? Why do I need to learn math? I'm just gonna be a pro wrestler." And my dad says, "Well, you need to learn to read so you can read your pro wrestling contract. You need to know math because you need to know the numbers in the contract, how much money you're making." So fast forward like 30 some years, I'm a professional wrestler, and my brother has his PhD in mathematics as a professor in math.
That is pretty funny, man.
Yeah, at some point, man, we Freaky Friday'd it. He started getting really, really into math when he was wrestling, and I just kept going with this.
Is your dad as proud of you as a wrestler as he is as a son, the PhD?
Absolutely not. No.
I was going to say.
No. My dad was a federal judge. You know, he was a lawyer, then a federal judge. He argued in front of the Supreme Court before. You know, like my dad he's an educated man. I don't think he appreciates his son, you know, play fighting in tights. Well, what are you going to do, man?
Did your brother ever have any regrets of leaving?
Just my brother? No. My brother, he lives a completely different life to me. He's married. He's got five daughters. Five daughters. Yo, bro, five daughters. And, you know, I'm just like, I'm a cowboy. Like, I'm a nomad. I'm a maniac still doing this.
You were ambitious, it sounds like. You would do anything to break in the industry. And what were your, did you have the big dream? Did you say, well, were you too young and dumb not to know that you couldn't achieve these huge heights that you got to?
I don't know what my goal was. And let me clarify. My parents, they're great, and they are proud of me in a certain manner of speaking. So I don't want to make it seem like they hate everything I do, because that wouldn't be true. I don't know what I was thinking when I broke in. I don't know what I thought was going to happen. I don't know how far I ever thought I would get. I do remember the first time I worked for WWE and I was on TV. I remember thinking like, oh man, I can't believe I did this. This is actually possible. So I think before that, I don't think I ever thought I would ever work for WWE in any sort of capacity.
Was that your first match? Was that against Eddie Guerrero?
Yeah, 2005. Yeah, working with Eddie Guerrero on TV. Correct.
And the story was you showed up kind of as an extra, and you were the right size and the right guy, and Eddie was super polite and super over the top nice to you. What lesson did you take with that to working with younger wrestlers in the future?
You know, yeah, it was amazing. Honestly, I wasn't even an extra. Like, Paul London, who's a buddy of mine, like, I just wanted to hang out with him. And I asked him if he wanted to grab dinner afterwards. He's like, just come to the show instead. So, you know, working with Eddie was awesome. You're right, man. He was super gracious, super kind. And it taught me a very valuable lesson. And, you know, he was on top of the business. And at 21, I was a kid, man. It was my first time on WWE television. We couldn't have been, you know, further as far as, you know, the wrestling totem pole. But he treated me not just an equal. He actually was, like, humble towards me. And it just went to show me that if he could do that for me, like, nobody's better than anybody. There's never a situation where I should treat anybody like less of a human being because of what I've done or how long I've been. And, I have taken liberties in my career, and I think everybody has. I have treated people probably not how I should have treated them, but that's really something, especially in my later years in my career, I really, really try to keep in mind.
Were you, when you found out, you know, you're there just to hang out, and then you find out that you get a chance to work a match with Eddie Guerrero, are you shitting your pants?
I didn't believe it was going to happen. You know, I was 21, but I'd been in the business for, like, whatever, you know, five, six years at that point, right? So, like, to me, nothing happens until it happens. And even when it happens, it hasn't happened yet. You know
what
I mean?
Very true.
So they say, yeah, it's going to be you and Eddie tonight. You know, I talk to Eddie. I think once I saw my name on the lineup, like, they had, you know, a proper, like, lineup hanging on the wall. Then I thought, like, oh, wow, this is actually happening.
And even then, it's like 95%, you know?
Right, exactly. Yo, we could have gone out there, had the match, and then they could have cut the match from TV. Exactly. Yeah. You know, so even nothing happens until it happens, and when it happens, it hasn't happened yet.
And as someone who's a smaller guy was, and of course, breaking in kind of in that Monday Night War era, Eddie and Ray, were those kind of your guys you looked up to?
No, my guy was Mick Foley. That was my guy. That was the guy I looked up to. Yeah.
What was it about Mick?
You know, when he did those sit down interviews with Jim Ross in 1997, he talked about how he, you know, ate bugs for attention in school, and they showed videos of him jumping off his garage, and he was a little, you know, he was different, and he was odd. He didn't fit the mold, and I was like, yeah, that's me. That's my guy. That's Mick Foley. And from that moment on, Mick Foley was my guy. And at 34 years old, I'll say Mick Foley's still my guy.
So what year did you get hooked up with Ring of Honor, and how did that come about?
That was 2003. So Alex Shelley and I, we paired up. We're both from Michigan, and we paired up and we started traveling together, you know, most notably to IWA Mid-South at first. And which was at the time, all those videos got out, you know, Smart Mark Video filmed all the shows and those tapes got out. So we started sort of making a name for ourselves there. And I had known Punk since I first broke in, right? And Punk took a liking. Punk did not like me when we first met, okay?
What was the reason that he didn't like you?
Was it a lifestyle thing, perhaps?
No. First of all, it's punk. It's, you know, as the kids say, it's punk being punk. You know, anybody that's ever met the guy. So right away, you know, I remember the first words he ever said to me. I walked into a locker room in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, that show that my brother was on, Wrestling Punk. And I walk in there, and Punk just goes, "Who the fuck is this kid?" And that's it, right? And then, so Punk did not like me. I was just a little shitty kid, you know. Too, I wasn't like, didn't have a great etiquette. I'm just like, I was a little maniac kid that just was in the business / wanted to be in the business. And but like at 19 years old, you know, he saw me and Alex Shelley wrestling at Ian's and how good we were doing. He's like, "Hey man, give me a tape of this last match you and Shelley had, and I'm gonna pass along to Gabe Sapolsky, who's the booker at Ring of Honor." And Gabe watched it, and I think the feedback we got was, "Oh, those guys are good, but they're not Ring of Honor good." And then Chris Sabin, they were booking Chris Sabin for a show, and they didn't want to fly him, so they just said, "Hey Sabin, bring two guys, we'll put them on the pre-show." And Sabin asked me and Shelley to come, and he told Gabe, "Hey, I'm gonna bring Alex Shelley and Jimmy Jacobs." And Gabe said, "Oh, I just saw those guys, they're good, we'll put them on the main show and see how they do." So it was just me and Shelley like busting our asses and just getting noticed by everybody, you know.
In that time of Ring of Honor, you had a lot of different angles, a lot of different ways to promote yourself. You used YouTube a lot. You used videos and blog posts, whether it was Age of the Fall or whether it was Scum or whatever it was. What is your enduring kind of memory of your experience in Ring of Honor?
I had 10 years there, right? It was great. I did the furry boot thing with the mini Bruiser Brody Huss Huss deal. Then into the emo character, the whole love storyline with Lacey. I'll always look back fondly on that, the battle of Lacey. And you're right, man, I was using YouTube early 2006, before like everybody was doing it. I'm not saying
I was just going to say, yeah, you were doing it before it was like big in wrestling, right?
Correct. Not saying like I invented it, but now everybody does, and it's so hard to cut through the shit. You know, there's so much stuff out there that it's really hard to like stick out. But really, in early 2006, not everybody was doing it. So I had this like cool music video I made, the Ballad of Lacey, this love song I wrote to my manager, and it clicked and it hit, and we started firing on all cylinders. So we did that, and then a year and a half later, we did the Age of the Fall thing, and that's something that, you know, that's probably the most I was ever featured or pushed in my career. So we're talking about 10 years ago now, with me and Seth, Seth Rollins now, Tyler Black back then, tag teaming and the stuff we did, hanging Jay Briscoe. But the debut of the Age of the Fall, we attacked the Briscoes in Chicago, and I'm wearing this all white suit, white coat, white tights, and we hang Jay Briscoe upside down. And so he's dangling over me, but he's bleeding, and he's bleeding immensely. And basically, I took a shower in the guy's blood while cutting a promo. And it's wow. it was like the craziest. Go online. Look, like you could never do that again. At the time, I just thought it was kind of cool. But looking back at it, it was fucking horrific, man. It was something out of a horror movie. Yeah, it was absolutely insane. So we did that, and the stuff with me and Kevin years later with Scum and. Man, yeah, I had a lot of great times in Ring of Honor.
Did you think, because you, so you were with Tyler Black in that group, did you think, you know, when you first met him, I'm sure you thought he was good and everything, but did you think he was going to go on to be the big superstar that he is?
I mean, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's, I, so Gabe and I were forming this group, you know, this unnamed group at this point. And we were trying to figure out who should be in it. We both agreed the Necro Butcher. And then I had recommended this Tyler Black kid and his tag team partner at the time, Merrick Brave, too. But Gabe wasn't as high on Merrick, and he wanted Tyler on there. And I just, look, I knew the guy was going to be great. And I just wanted to ride his coattails as far as I could at the time. And, you know, that's the truth. You know, it was an easy call. And it was a good pairing, too, because he was so athletic and so talented. But he was still young enough where me being there was essential to him as well.
But, got it. But at the time, in that 10-year period, even though you were featured a lot, it must have been easy to get lost in the mix when you look at all the people that were there. Like, you can ask, did you know Tyler Black would be a big star? But did you know Kevin Owens would be where he was? Did you know Bryan Danielson would be where he was? Do you know that CM Punk would be where he was? It was a pretty crazy time with a lot of talent, was it not?
Yeah, and I mean, and look, man, it still is. That's the truth. All the best talent, for the most part, really have come through there. I mean, this is a time in wrestling that we're seeing that the most valuable asset anybody can have is the ability to go anywhere and the experience of going different places and getting over wherever they've been. You know, Punk, yeah, we all knew Punk was going to be a big star. I knew Punk was going to be a big star back in like 2000, man. Just he just had that thing when we walk into the room and he's got that thing. Kevin, super talented guy, would have never guessed it. But it's awesome. Because we're seeing that, you know, what your body looks like doesn't matter as much. How tall you are doesn't matter as much. I mean, they need guys that connect with an audience, and all those guys that came through Ring of Honor know how to connect with an audience.
So the value of that versus, and not to bad talk anybody, but the homogenized approach of developmental, it seems to me that the guys who have gotten over in WWE are the guys who learned how to get over on their own.
I mean, for the most part, right? And it doesn't take me or you pointing that out to see that that it's mostly true, right?
Right.
I mean, there's guys, you know, a lot of the second generation guys who were in the business from the day they were born, and guys who have dedicated their lives to the business have done well. You know, look, developmental is great, the performance center is great, NXT is great, it's all great. But you will, like, doing the Largo loop, you will never have the experience of learning how to get over everywhere you go, man. That's just how it is. And it's not that that can't be taught. And there are guys that have come out of the performance center that do well just on their own. Don't get me wrong. But it's super valuable to be able to – valuable to be able to go wherever and just know your bit, know your character, know what to do, know how to connect with people. And that's just from traveling and honing your craft.
And yeah, when you're working harder for it and trying to build your name and character, when it's an 8-hour drive for $20, it just adds a little, it makes you more in depth, right?
Yeah, and let's be honest, man. And when nobody's telling you how to do it,
well, like, that to too,
me,
yeah.
To me, dude, to me, that was such a gift in my career. You know, it's funny. I just bought this one of these iMacBooks or whatever, so I could take all my VHS tapes and put them onto digital. So I'm watching this old stuff from me when I was 17 years old, and I have such a distance, you know, watching it. It's almost like I'm just watching somebody else. And I see how valuable it was that I broke in at a place where nobody knew what the fuck they were doing, because I got to make it up as I would go along. I never had anybody say, "Hey, Jimmy, this is how you should be Jimmy Jacobs." I never had anybody do this. And at the same token, I never asked anybody how to be Jimmy Jacobs. And that's what independent wrestling is. Like, you figure it out for yourself. When you're in that WWE bubble there, there's a bunch of people whose jobs it are to tell you how to do it or to make sure you're doing it right, people to hold your hands. But to me, like, here's the truth, man. Nobody has the answers. Nobody has the answers. Anybody says they have the answers, they're trying to sell you something. Like, nobody has the answers. It's something you have to figure out for yourself, man. I can maybe guide you in the right direction. I can give you a hint. Maybe I can see something in you. I can point it out that brings something out of you. But at the end of the day, there is no formula how to make stars. If there was, Ryback would be the biggest star in the business right now.
I agree. No, I agree. Everything you just said, I completely agree with.
Long Island, New York, this Saturday, June 9th, Create-A-Pro Wrestling returns to the St. James Sports Arena with Thy Kingdom Come, a live pro wrestling show featuring WWE Hall of Famer Jerry the King Lawler in action, plus Teddy Hart, James Ellsworth, the return of independent star MJF, and Impact Wrestling stars KM and Katie Lee Burchill.
And listen, guys, if you want to be a pro wrestler, the Creative Pro Wrestling Academy is the premier wrestling school in all of New York, but it's worth coming there from no matter where you're at. Trust me, you're going to learn from co-head trainers, first WWE superstar Curt Hawkins, and the founder of WrestlePro, Pat Buck, two guys who love wrestling. They've been doing it for super long, and they put so much into the school. It's really their lives. It's 24/7. And I've been to the school. It's a great facility, and so many good guys have come out of there. So please trust me. You want to check out this school.
I mean, that's definitely true. I'm a big fan of Curt Hawkins, the King of Queens, and liked him on the independent scene. Love him in WWE. And, of course, Pat Buck is a name that's come up a few times on our show. Right, Robbie?
Yeah, I mean, he created WrestlePro. He's been around forever. He's been trained by some of the best trainers in the world, and he's passing his knowledge on and creating wrestling superstars.
So, once again, it's this Saturday, June 9th, CreatorPro Pro Wrestling, Thy Kingdom Come. For tickets and more information, find them on Facebook and Twitter at CreatorPro, and visit CreatorProWrestling.com today.
Well, at one point, you auditioned to be a WWE manager, right?
Yes.
And then what was that? It didn't end up working out, or what was the deal with that?
Right. So the story with this is in, like, 2000, I want to say 11, Jamie Noble called me up on a Friday night, and he said, hey, we're going to be in Detroit on Monday. Vince is looking for managers. I know you're not a manager, but I know you can talk. Do you want to come? I was like, absolutely, dude, because I would love to be a manager, right? I went to WWE, and I was dressed like a main. I was dressed like a wild man, dude. I was, you know, just
what does a wild man mean? What does
just,
that mean?
Just like, yes, I had a suit on, but like a really preposterous suit. My hair's all like spiked up. I looked like Chris Angel, right?
Everybody's gonna look at you.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Like, but that's just how. Like, that was me dressing up for real, though. You know, all the jewelry and the makeup and all that stuff, and. So they bring me to a room, and I cut a promo. You know, Brooklyn Brawler's, he's running the little tape room, and I cut this promo. And I don't remember what I said, but I remembered it was good. And Brawler's like, wow, you know, that's really good, man. You can talk. Wow. And he comes up to me later. He's like, would you mind if I go up to Johnny Ace and ask him if we can get you a job here? Like, yeah, fuck yeah, of course, man.
Would you mind?
Yeah, exactly. Which is great. You know, I just think, you know, you're a little guy and you talking for the big guys. I just think it works so well. So at the end of the day, Jamie Noble comes up to me. He's like, look, man. Like, I don't want to jinx anything, but knock on wood, it's looking good. You know, Brawler put you over to Johnny. Punk put you over to Johnny. Daniel Bryan put you over to Johnny. I put you over to Johnny. And they're going to watch your promo tonight and come back tomorrow, but it's looking good. And all of a sudden, I'm like, holy shit, this is going to happen. This might actually happen. So I come back the next day to SmackDown, and it was like the day before it never even happened.
I've been, bro.
Yeah. And, you know, at the time, I'm like, what the fuck? How could this even happen? But, you know, now working there, I can tell you probably very realistically what happened is 1 week, Vince is like, God damn, we need some managers, guys. Come on. These big guys can't. Oh, God. What about the days of the managers? Guys, we need managers. And just ram that into everybody's head for like 1 day. And then everybody scrambled. It's like, oh, let's get some managers. They hear it. Cool. They got me. And then Vince never brought it up again. I'm sure that's what happened. Because that's what always happened. Vince would get in this like, God damn, guys, we need this. And then it would never be brought up again.
Right. He's like, who the fuck is the guy in the scarf?
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, so let's talk about what brought you there as a writer. In 2015, as you talked about on the Jericho podcast, under the influence, you had an epiphany. And sometimes these epiphanies, even under the influence, they can be valid and create connections that might not be there. And you had the epiphany that you wanted to write for the WWE. And not only that, you put everything in position to make that happen. So my question is to you is that something you've done a lot in your life, which is completely create situations out of your imagination and make them happen?
No. The truth is, man, as far as, you know, creating the situation was, I called in like 16 years of goodwill. I called in my favors. Like, I called in, like, hey, guys, can you do this for me? After building up a lot of goodwill for a lot of years in wrestling. Because I just knew this was the right path, yeah.
As soon as you started, you didn't really know to be scared. So you kind of went in there with kind of a maybe a cocky attitude or a confident attitude. How long did it take for that attitude to kind of wilt away to maybe more of the traditional WWE job scared?
Yeah, so I wouldn't say it was cocky or arrogant by any means. It was just enthusiastic. Like, I really wanted to get in there, and I wanted to give ideas. I wanted to be, you know, proactive on everything. And it was after a couple months that I realized, like, that's not the WWE way. And I realized that, oh, Vince is you're always one weird interaction with Vince away from being fired. And everybody's more conservative. Everybody is like, they pitch with, you know, everything's with ease. Everything's, you know, you qualify every pitch with, you know, I was almost wondering, and maybe this isn't the way we want to go, but, and I don't know, maybe this sparks a better idea because I don't have it fully formulated, but would there be anything to, you know, you have to preface it with that just so people know you're not coming on too strong, just so people know, like, you know, you're not being like forceful with your pitch. Because me, I'm just like, yo, what if we did this? You know, I just want to.
And how many people would, like, be with you going over this stuff? Like, how many of you is it?
It just depends, you know. Like, so during the week, or, you know, when you're in the Stanford office, you know, there's 25 writers. During the production meetings, you know, on a Monday, the first production meeting is all the writers and all the producers / agents and some people from the truck. So you're talking about like 40 some people there. And the second production meeting is just, you know, Vince and the writers. You're talking about, you know, 15, 20 people there. And it just depends. And sometimes you're working in smaller groups too. So
did you ever say anything and people just like looked at you like you had 10 heads or you're ridiculous or told you not to, you know, was anyone ever just like, dude, you shouldn't be talking or.
I'm sure. Cause Vince has looked at me like that a million times. That was, I think that's the, you know, that was a part of working there for me. That was difficult was I don't think like, Vince understood a word that was coming out of my mouth sometimes. I feel like he was probably just like, I would pitch and he would just like look at me and like going through as I'm talking, going through his head. It's like, oh, God damn it. The earrings he has in there. Oh, God. What does he do with his hair? God, he should really shave. That tie's atrocious. You know, all right. Well, we'll think about your idea. You know what I mean? Like I felt he was always like just judging me and maybe that's my shit too, you know? You know, in my head, but it, like, no, there literally was a time, we were in like San Diego and I had a little back and forth with Vince, about like a pitch in the production meeting. And he just like looked at me and he didn't respond. And then he whispers to the lead writer of Raw, Ed Koski. He just whispers something to him. Right. So I just pitch something and Vince just stares at me and he whispers to my boss right next to him. I'm like, what the fuck? What did he just say? You know, what the fuck is it? Does he hate me? Does he think I'm stupid? What is it? And then I'm told later, yeah, Vince thinks you dress too gimmicky. That's what he said. So you might want to take off that pink tie and just, you know, next time, just don't wear that pink tie with the black shirt.
This might not be here nor there, but he's you feel he's critical of you because the way you look, and someone told you he was critical of the way that you look. Isn't Michael Hayes like walking around there in like
absolutely yeah, but he's Michael Hayes, and all I ever wanted to be when I first got there was Michael Hayes. All I wanted to do was be able to be me, and people be like, yeah, he's, you know, because look, I am what I am. Like, if people want to call me eccentric or like whatever it is, you know, I am how I am. All I, you know, Michael Hayes, yes, it's Michael Hayes, but he's really good at his job. So he can dress like that and that's fine. And he was kind of like grandfathered in, like he got that, right. he, you know, because he's Michael Hayes. And that's all I ever wanted was just like, yo, just let me be me and do my job.
Right. How much of your personal style and your personal expression do you feel that you hid to try to fit into the corporate structure there?
I tried to hide so much of it, but like it would just come out, you know, right. Just, I, you know, I took out my earrings. I didn't wear nail polish. I combed my hair. Like, I was wearing suits and ties. But still, there's something wrong with the, you know, with whatever the way I was looking. I remember Vince coming up to me one day, and he goes, what do you use, a barber or a stylist? Well, either way, you need to get a new one. You know?
Nice. That's nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, because you had so many friends there, was did any of your relationships change now that you're writing for guys that you know? And you know, like, are they kissing your butt now, even though they're your friends? Or what, did it make any of your relationships weird with you being in a position that could help their career?
I don't think so. And look, I think there's a big misconception about what the writers are. The writers are not like the generals of this army. You know, the writers are not making calls. Like, I don't have control of anybody's career. Vince does. We were simply advisors to the king, you know? Sure. Yes, sure he might take our suggestions, and sure we have to do a lot of the grunt work, but by no means are the writers decision makers. By no means, you know, at all.
Still, at the same time, though, you're a writer, and a lot of your really good friends, like Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, are your friends, and you guys are probably hanging out. Is that kind of thing frowned upon, or was it okay because you guys were buddies before?
Yeah, it was frowned upon. Yeah, it was a concern. I think from some people. Look, man, in a lot of ways, I was an experiment. You know, I was the first, you know, independent wrestler that really was in that room. And you know, I first guy from my generation, like the Ring of Honor generation, to be in the writing room. So yeah, it was an experiment, and part of that experiment was like, yo, I'm friends with these guys, and some people didn't like it, but it was what it was, and I tried not to hang out with them super flagrantly at TV, but like, I kind of did too, and kind of didn't give a fuck too. And look, I wouldn't abuse my role as far as like, I didn't like let the guys know things they weren't supposed to know, or those guys were my friends, but they were also easy to push for. Because they're good at what they do too. Oh, yeah. So I never felt like it was weird for me to be like, yo, you know, what if we have Kevin Owens do this or Sami Zayn do this, you know, and suggest things, because like they were fucking good at their jobs.
Was there a point where you missed wrestling?
I was just going to
ask. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. There was this point. So when I went there, I was super done with wrestling. I mean, super done with wrestling. I mean, like, like, I remember I wrestled, it was in early 2015, I wrestled Tommaso Ciampa at the ECW Arena, and it was just, I was like breaking at this point, and like he kind of hit me hard with a few things, and I go to the back, and he's like, hey man, you all right? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. He's like, you sure? No problem. And then I go to a bathroom, I lock the door, and I just started crying on the ground. Like, I was so done. I was so like, oh my God, I just have to be done wrestling.
That's how I felt for the past 10 years.
Right, exactly. It's like, I can't get hit anymore. I can't get beat up anymore. I can't take a bump anymore. So I was super done with it.
Hey, Robbie, we have a new sponsor on board with Why It Ended. We would love to welcome Pleasure Products USA. Now, Pleasure Products USA is your online destination for innovative, quality, and affordable items geared towards men's sexual pleasure.
That's right, Matt. Pleasure Products USA is here for those ready to have a match, but is lacking an opponent.
Well, then ring the bell and head on over to stopusingyourhand.com today.
Grab a rest hold with one of their exciting products, including their signature product, the 3V Starlet Stroker. That's right, the 3V Starlet Stroker has an amazing realistic internal texture, multiple vibration settings, and for the finishing maneuver, an actual voice of an adult film star is recorded to the device to make more than the crowd pop.
So you're telling me that on this device, the 3V Starlet Stroker, you actually get an actual adult star's voice on there?
An actual adult star. I mean, who wouldn't want to be pinned by Lauren Phillips, Kate England, Ariella Ferreira, Carmen Valentina, Nikki Huntsman, or Eden Blair?
I don't know anybody. And fans of Why It Ended can get an extra 10% off their purchase by entering promotional code WhyItEnded at checkout.
To earn yourself a 5-star rating today by visiting stopusingyourhand.com, Don't get counted out or disqualify yourself from satisfaction. Pick up a 3B Starlet Stroker or any of their other exciting products today.
Don't forget, guys, Pleasure Products USA is where their business is your pleasure.
So I was super done with it until this one day where I was doing this this backstage promo with Jericho and Shane McMahon, right? So it would have been probably a year and change into the job, and I was just seeing how the blocking was going to look, and so I stood in for Chris for us to shoot something real quick. I was like, let me just see how this looks. You know, Shane walks in here, okay, then Chris is here, and like, I start like doing the promo a little bit, and then I'm like, all right, cool, now let's see what that looks like. And they play it back, and I just see it, and I'm like, oh shit, man, I look good on that tape, don't I? and that's when it started, man. And by the end it was getting out of hand. Like, as far as like, I was cracking, you know, like, and I like the zombie princess was like starting to come through the cracks. You know, Vince had mentioned, you know, in the last, you know, whatever, 6 months of my time there, he had mentioned that we need a general manager for 205 Live, you know, which ended up being the Spud. And, yo, I was like, fuck yeah, I'll do that. And I shot a video, and like, I had a video all set. I was like, next time he brings this up, you know, Road Dogg will pitch it to him, I hope. And, you know, because I can't pitch it to him, but maybe if Dog does, and, you know, they're trying to save costs so they don't have to hire anybody new, and you know, there's no new travel expenses, you know, attached to me and whatever. But, of course, Vince never brought that up again. One of those things that, but, yeah, I was ready to.
Even though creatively, personally, with your personal style, you were stifled, you couldn't wrestle, how much satisfaction did you get out creatively out of creating things like the List of Jericho and working with Chris and seeing sometimes your vision being brought to light on screen?
I mean, that was great. That was the, you know, clearly the most fun. I had a lot of fun working with the Social Outcast too, actually. That was like totally like a ton of fun with those guys. But then, you know, then I started working with Chris and Chris and Kevin, and that was great, man. Once we figured out what Chris's voice was, it became a blast. You know, God bless Chris, man. I got to give him credit, and I didn't really think about this at the time or have clarity for it. Like, this guy's ballsy, man. Like, you know, yeah, he's Chris Jericho and whatever. He's a legend, but like, he comes back and he turns heel, and then he shreds his light up jacket, which was like his thing. And so basically, like, he's jumping out of an airplane without a parachute. Like, what's his next thing going to be? I don't even think he knew. You know, I'm pretty sure he didn't know, because, like, we were just sort of flying by the seat of our pants as far as, like, what's he, you know, he's doing the stupid idiot a little bit. And then we do, like, the Gift of Jericho, and then the List of Jericho, and then it just started rolling, you know. But I got to give the guy a lot of credit for, like, being like, hey, I'm getting rid of my old gimmick, and let's see what the fuck happens now.
Well, even now, the stuff he's doing in New Japan, like, he's always just doing different shit and new stuff to reinvent himself. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's great, man.
At some point in Raw, you got to work with Mick Foley, because Mick Foley was involved in that feud. What was it like to work with him and maybe write for him a little bit, since he was someone you looked up to?
Dude, Mick was great. And it just reminded me about like why I liked him when I was like 14. It was so crazy. Like, even if I wasn't a Mick Foley fan at 14, I would have been a Mick Foley fan at like 32, 33. With the way he thought about promos, with like, look, because the writers, man, we have so much stuff, so much content. And Mick was a guy that would take the care to go through things with a fine tooth comb, to connect some dots that sometimes we missed, and to really put his own, you know, his own character and his own person into it. He did a promo, man. And I love Mick, dude. I love Mick. He did a promo in Detroit. I think it's when they fired him, right? He was like the GM of Raw, and Stephanie McMahon says, hey, you have to the end of the night to pick somebody to fire. And then, of course, Mick comes out at the end. He's like, yeah, I got a name for you, Stephanie McMahon. And he has this promo with her and Triple H, and I was watching this from the back, and I'm watching this like, fuck yeah, dude. Like, that's my guy. Just with the way he talks, with the vulnerability of the character, with how just the realism of it. I'm like, man, like, that is my guy. I think the world of Mick Foley, man. And as a person, like, he's as great of a person as he is a performer.
So what is your best memory in WWE?
My best memory, like, when I, just the first thing that comes into mind when you say that without thinking about it is the Festival of Friendship and once it was over. Like the second it was over, and look, it was grueling to do it and to write it and to get through it and to produce it and all these moving parts, and different people have different opinions on how we should do it. But the moment was over, and fucking I got a standing ovation in fucking Gorilla, which motherfucking never happens. And I fucking, like, Sami Zayn was there, and I fucking high-fived him, and I was like, fuck yeah. I banged my head. I was like, hell yeah. That was a really great moment for me. You know, that, you know, and the moment that Kevin Owens, you know, when he won the Universal Championship, that was big for me too.
So there was a point where Wrestling Observer said you took time off for personal issues, but you said on the Jericho podcast that you started to let the opiate thing got out of control for you, and you decided to go ahead and go into a 30-day rehab. And in that, getting away from wrestling, getting off the road, getting some clarity, you realized you did not miss the WWE at all.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, look, man, the opiate thing was out of control, like, for a long time. And, like, I was using on and off, and I mean, mostly on, very few times off, since, like, 2005. So it was just, I probably should have done it, like, taken care of it a long time ago. It just came to a head, and it was the best thing for me. And yeah, man, it just gave me some clarity, you know, gave me some time away from wrestling. By, you know, the longest I'd been away from wrestling in whatever, 18 years. And yeah, I didn't miss it. You know, I would talk to my buddies, I would call them, you know, from rehab, and they would tell me about the craziness of, you know, Vince is this and what Vince is doing. And I'm like, fuck, dude, I don't miss that. And yeah, it was when I got out of rehab, there was a whole perspective shift in life in general. You know, I came home and I'm just looking at my apartment. I'm like, God, I have so much shit. Why do I have all this shit? And I just threw out like 3/4 of my stuff. And, you know, I was enthusiastic about work, but at the same time, like I couldn't hide it anymore. You know, I tried to be okay with it. I tried to be okay with like the environment, but man, if you look at my search history from the last, you know, few months that I was with WWE, it's all like, new wrestling gear. It's like, it's at the, like teaching overseas, like looking at jobs like that, looking at jobs like going to like the Peace Corps. Like that's all I was looking at the last like 6 months I was there, man. Cause I just couldn't anymore. Like I couldn't be okay with what I was doing anymore.
So you basically knew deep inside that at some point in the near future you were going to be done.
Absolutely. Like a couple things. Look, I'm so grateful it all happened how it happened. I really, really am. I'm so grateful. There was about a month after I got fired where I was sitting back and thinking, I was having the time of my life, and I'm thinking like, fuck, dude, like how long would I have let this go? Like how miserable would I have gotten? How far would I have taken? I was like, yo, I would have stayed in that job for forever. I would, you know, oh man, the money's really good, and where else am I gonna go? And you know, like just the fear of loss would have consumed me, and I would have been miserable like so many other guys there. I'm so grateful it went down how it did. But I'll tell you this: if it hadn't gone down then, it probably would have gone down like after that, or like I was like, I would call myself Corporate Chris, you know, Corporate Chris. The shell of Corporate Chris was starting to crack, and the zombie princess was coming through. And it was getting to the point that like, it was like, yo, you guys either get me and everything that comes with me, or you don't get me. That's really where it was starting to head to.
So did you start wearing like, go back to like wearing clothes you wanted to wear and stuff?
Like that was all starting to transpire. It's funny, the morning that I got fired, you know, I went to the office at like, you know, supposed to be there at like 11, like 10 a.m., like I went and got my ears re-pierced. Like that morning, you know?
You just didn't give a fuck.
Which I found so, I don't know, funny. It was what it was. Like it was such a clear sign. You're like, yo, I'm ready to be me again. And then I go in and they fire me. I was like, great. Like that's like, we're on the same page here, I think.
So that day before, which is what everybody of course, wants to hear about. When did you first know that your friends in the Elite Bullet Club, all those guys, were going to be doing what they were doing? When did you find out from them that they were going to be hitting the parking lot?
I was at the arena, and one of my buddies who works for WWE texted me and was like, "Hey, are the Young Bucks at the arena?" I'm like, "Whoa, fucking are they?" And he goes, "Yeah, I think they are." So I ran out like looking for them, and then I found them. That's when I, you know, found
out. Did you think, "Oh, this is great. I could get in trouble for this or whatever," or did you not even think like it was a big deal as it was happening?
Neither. I knew it was a distinct possibility that people weren't going to be happy about it. But I also thought, look, if people are going to be happy about it, well, A, they shouldn't be, because, like, who fucking cares? And if they are unhappy about it, then who fucking cares? Like when I took the picture, and then, like, I'm like, all right, like, just on my way out, I said hi to them, and I was like, yeah, let's get a picture real quick. And I took the picture. I'm like, I'm not going to do anything with it. And then, you know, an hour later, I'm in Gorilla, and I'm like, and I fucking post it. Like, while I was in Gorilla, I posted the thing. And, like, of course I knew I, like, shouldn't have. Look, man, I think there's a part of me that, you know, after it all happened, Joey Mercury calls me up, and he's like, "You happy now?" And I go, "I don't know." He's like, "Well, you weren't happy before, because a happy guy doesn't do what you did." And it's very true. I think there's a part of me that wanted the trouble, but I wanted them to keep me. Don't get me wrong, I didn't want to get fired. But I did want them to know who the fuck I am, you know? Like, I wanted them to know, like, hey, I'm Jimmy Jacobs, dude. Like, this is it. I'm friends with these guys. I'm a maniac. I'm eccentric. And I wanted them to be, when I say them, I mean Vince. I wanted Vince to be okay with me being me. And if he wasn't, then, I wanted to get in trouble. And then I want him to be like, yeah, but he's really good at his job. Let's keep him. That's really what I wanted.
So it was kind of a tipping point to see, maybe in your mind, if you were valuable enough to be yourself versus were you expendable if you made one of those mistakes that you were afraid could get you fired?
I don't think it was that conscious of a decision, but like really that's what it was. It was kind of like, yeah, fuck it. If they don't like it, they don't like it. If, you know, but like, I think I'm good enough where they should keep me around. And I, look, man, and that's part of the, if I have any bad feelings about this, and to be honest, dude, like I said, I'm so grateful everything happened out happened, and I'm very grateful for the time in WWE. Make no mistake about it. If any of this sounds like I have any bitter feelings or anything about WWE, that's not the case, because I'm so grateful for the time I had. I'm grateful for the experience. I came out so much better than I came in, you know, both financially and my experience and what I learned and being there with my friends and just those sort of, like, you know, incredible opportunities that were there. I mean, it was amazing, man. And the stuff I learned, like how much I know now after leaving this place, invaluable. I'm so grateful for it. But if I have some, like, bitterness or if there's a point I'm like, that sort of sucks, I wish Vince knew I was as good at my job as I think other people around me knew that. You know, I wish Vince would be like, oh yeah, no, he fucked up, but yeah, he's good, man. He's good. He's the guy that did this. He's the guy that did all Chris Jericho stuff. He's the guy that did the list. He's the guy that did all this stuff with John Cena and Roman Reigns. Oh, he's a guy. You know what I'm saying? Like, I wish he understood that, and he didn't. And so there's part of me that feels like, ugh.
So people are going to want to know, you know, joyously going out and seeing your friends, waiting and taking a picture is one thing, but sitting in Gorilla and putting on Instagram to a guy that you know will fire somebody over a misunderstanding, how much of a level of there was just like, you know, people thinking that maybe you were booking your own firing?
I was not booking my own firing. I wish I could, like, take credit for that and be like, yeah, I'm a genius. I put this angle with the hottest act outside of WWE to get fired. No, man, it was like kind of like, who gives a fuck? That's what it came down to. Who gives a fuck?
Right.
That's it.
Right.
So the day you went in, who actually told you that they were releasing you?
So the picture thing happened, what, like on a Monday, right? We were in Ontario, California, and so, like, I mean, I put it up, and a half hour later, 15 minutes later, I'm in a room like, yo, what the hell, why is this up? You know, like, I'm getting reamed for it. you know, somebody in Gorilla was not happy about it. And then I was out of the country. I went to like Italy for a few days. So we did like SmackDown on Tuesday. And I remember like Shane McMahon showed up like super late. Like seg one of SmackDown was like supposed to be like Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn and Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon or something. And Shane, like, he kept saying, no, I'll be there. And like, I was like, yo, we got to change this. I'd like rewrite the seg one like the half hour before we went on air. And I remember like doing it and being like, fuck, I'm so good at my fucking job, man. If they fire me for this shit, like, fuck them. So then I was out of the country, and then we were in Colorado that next Monday and Tuesday. And then so then I went home Wednesday, and then I was in the office Thursday. So I didn't get fired like a week and a half after it happened.
So because it was that long, did you think like, man, nothing was going to come from it? Because a week
went on? I knew it was all a distinct possibility. I went in that morning, that Thursday, thinking like, hey, if I make it through today, I should be fine.
And who was it that talked to you?
My immediate boss, the guy who's the manager of the of the writing team. You know, they brought me into the room in HR. I was in a little room with a few of the other writers. I saw my immediate boss. I saw like he was in the office kind of early. I was like, oh, that's not a good sign. And I was like, if I make it through today, I'll be okay. And then, you know, somebody comes in, they're like, Chris, could you go to the second floor HR room? I'm like, all right. I'm like, this is it, guys. I'm like, I'm out. And that was it.
So when the decision comes down, you're told, you know, that, you know, the unprofessional thing. And what is your immediate feeling in your gut? Is it regret, or is it exuberation, or is it fear? What's going through your mind at that moment?
So when they tell me to go to the second floor HR room in HR, I go to the elevators, and there's this moment where I'm standing in front of the elevators, kind of like, wow, this is happening today. All right. Like, shit. Like, it was kind of the surreal moment. I mean, dude, after that, relief is probably the biggest word I could use to describe it. Like, I left there feeling light. You know, I was like, cool. Now the rest of my life. Awesome.
Who's the first person you called?
Probably Kevin Owens would have been the first person I told. I'm sure it was Kevin. Yeah, actually, I think I called him on I lived like a block from the WWE headquarters. So I was like walking from the headquarters to my house. I called Kevin.
And then do you think at any point there's a open door for a return to be a writer again?
I don't know. Look, I'll tell you this. I'm not interested in going back and doing the job I was doing. They could call me up, I remember, you know, like Kevin was really upset, and Kevin's like, you know, look, I'll go into Vince's office. You know, Kevin's the man, dude. He's such a good friend. And he was like, I'll go into Vince's office if you want. I'll talk to him. You know, I'm sure Roman would too, you know, cause like, look, man, like, as far as like the talent goes, like, you know, I think that a lot of the talent liked working with me. I think I can say that. I mean, Roman Reigns, I just did, you know, 4 weeks with him and John Cena, and he came up to me afterwards, and he, you know, expressed how much he liked working with me and wanted to work with me exclusively in the future. So he's like, yeah, I'm sure Roman would too, or whatever. And I was like, no, dude, like, it's good. We're good. If they called me up today and were like, hey, we want you back at the job, we'll offer you double, without hesitation, I'd say no. I've zero. Like, as far as, like, as a performer goes, or as far as, like, working at NXT in the Performance Center, you know, helping out younger talent, like, that sounds cool. But as far as, like, working for Vince McMahon again, especially in the capacity I was in, I don't really have an interest in that.
I got to ask, as a fan, as someone who's been to the last five WrestleManias with my son and just pretty engaged with the product, the whole Roman Reigns thing, and with the people in the back, is there any thought of, or any core of people that believe that maybe he's miscast and maybe he should be a heel because he gets booed? Or is that something that's not even brought up because Vince is so behind him?
Well, look, it's been brought up numerous times, but like here's what you have to understand about this, and let me try to, I guess, explain it, because you're thinking about it in terms of like good guys and bad guys, yeah, and heels, babe faces, and pro wrestling, and that's not really I don't think what Vince is thinking of it in terms of. Look, the way the WWE, WWF, WWWF has always worked is there's always one top guy, right? Whether we're talking about like Bruno Sammartino or Bob Backlund or Hulk Hogan or Bret Hart or Steve Austin, and then, you know, for years, John Cena. Everything filters to one guy. Yes, the product becomes hot, but you hope really like one guy is gonna be that star, because anytime the business is hot, there is a star that draws you that money. And for years, it was John Cena. And, you know, people, you know, they were sick of Super Cena. I was 7 years old and I was sick of Hulk Hogan, but that's just how it was, right? So by 2000, whatever, 14 or 13 or 12, you know, John looks like he's sort of, you know, he's doing some other things. He's not going to be there full time. And they have to, Vince has to find a new guy to filter everything to, because you have an underlevel baby face and he's there to put over a mid-card heel, who's there to put over an upper-level baby face, who's there to put over a top heel, who's there to put over John Cena. That's how the business works. So without John Cena, you need a new guy. You need a new guy to put in that position. And Roman Reigns was deemed to be that guy. Now, I think at some point they got that. Look, Roman's awesome. Like, don't get me wrong, Roman's awesome. But at some point, because of kind of the dynamic with Daniel Bryan, especially, and how choreographed the push of Roman Reigns was, how just very like obvious it was, how mishandled it was. There was backlash, but honestly, you know, they did such a good job creating this monster heel of Brock Lesnar. It was back in like 2014, right? And it was an amazing job. And at the same time, they're supposed to have this sort of parallel journey with this, you know, this Roman Reigns making this big hero, and they did such a poor job of it that there's all this backlash. But then they're too deep into it to turn around. Is really what happens. Like, yeah, of course Roman being a heel would be awesome. Of course it would be awesome. Of course you turn him heel, and then in a few years he becomes a mega over babyface. Like, of course. I don't think anybody would deny that. But here's the question. Then who's the guy? Like, who is the one guy that everything filters to? And you could say, like, oh, maybe Seth Rollins is going to be Dean Ambrose. You know, maybe. You know, Daniel Bryan at the time, you could say, yes, Daniel Bryan. But like that was the crux, right? That I think was the point of like, hey, should it be Daniel Bryan? Should it be Roman Reigns? And Vince's guy was Roman Reigns, right? Could it been Daniel Bryan? Yeah, I think it could have. But Vince also thinks of things in greater terms than just pro wrestling. Like, Vince is thinking, is this guy going to be representative of our company, of the WWE guy? You know, he's small. He doesn't really look like a big WWE star. You know, so there's different things there, right? So that's really the main thing is like, who's going to be the guy? So you could turn Roman Reigns. Like, I don't keep up with the product anymore right now. But if Braun Strowman got hot enough as a babyface, and I have no idea if he is or isn't right now, but let's say he got hot enough as a babyface, you could probably turn Roman Reigns heel and filter everything up to Braun Strowman. Right. But short of that, I don't know who it would be or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Well, that's a great explanation. It's one that I've used just from the outside, is that he's the only guy because there's no one to replace him. And, yes. You know, makes perfect sense to me. Now, this is called Why It Ended. But for you, you're 34 years old. You've got a big wrestling future ahead of you. What was your outlook? As soon as you had some time to catch your breath, what was your outlook as to what you wanted to do now that you had the whole world and you had all these opportunities?
I mean, it's really, dude, I'm still at that point. You know, it was cool, dude. Like, for me, it ended in WWE. I'll tell you probably why it ended. Yes, because of the picture. But as far as, you know, why did this picture matter? Because Vince doesn't know who the Bullet Club is. I mean, he probably does now because of, you know, of Finn and because of AJ, and we called those guys the Club for a second. But he doesn't really know who the Young Bucks are or Kenny Omega, really. It wasn't that. It was probably the idea that this writer kid's trying to get himself over. That is, I'm sure that's what came out of Vince's mouth. God damn, Dave, you can't have these guys trying to get themselves over like this. I'm sure that's what happened. you know, Jimmy Jacobs came out. That's what that's why it ended, man. And so once the news broke, I'm sorry, I got fired on Thursday, and the news didn't break almost like a week later. So I had like a good like 6 days to like sort of digest it and sit back and be like, all right, like what's going to happen? I didn't know, man. I didn't like Jimmy Jacobs has been dead for 2.5 years. I had no idea if anybody was going to care at all. So to my pleasant surprise, I had a hot 15 minutes, right? And it was great, and it's still great, man. I'm still working a ton, and I'm loving working for Impact. It's like it's a super cool fit. It's a lot of the fun parts about what my job was at WWE, without you know what the negative was, which to me was just dealing with Vince and having to make sure everything was Vince's way, and which that's his prerogative. It's his sandbox. Don't get me wrong. That's not a negative thing. It's just the truth. Like it's just everything has to be his way. In Impact Wrestling, I don't have to worry about is this way going to make Vince mad. All I have to worry about is this way going to connect with the fans? Is this the best way to do something? Is this way going to hopefully draw money? Is this way hopefully going to get this guy over? Like those are the terms I get to think in now, which is super cool.
And why did it end up being Impact as opposed to, because I know right a few days after you left, you did that thing where you took the picture in the crowd at Ring of Honor. Like, why didn't you end up going back there?
Right. And like, yeah. So there was talk there, and there was an offer there. I worked for Ring of Honor for 10 years, and Impact, I wanted to see how it was. I wanted to see, like, I went to their Bound for Glory, that pay-per-view, and the TV's following it. It was Ottawa, Canada. And I was going there. I was like, yo, I'm just going to see how this is. And then maybe do Ring of Honor, maybe do Impact. I don't know. And it was just a nice fit, man. Like they needed a guy who could wear a lot of different hats, who could do a lot of different things. You know, I know this is going to sound how it sounds, but it is in a rebuilding phase. And like, I seem like a good guy to help, help rebuild it.
Awesome.
And I heard you say that right now with everything you're doing, you're making more money in the industry than you ever have.
Certainly on independent wrestling, it's probably comparable to what I was making in WWE as far as like take home goes, minus the benefits. So like including benefits, I was making more in WWE as far as like, you know, 401k and health insurance and employee stock purchasing program. Like with that, my money at WWE like would be more, but like it's as far as the take home goes, it's really comparable.
Plus, here you get the quality of life,
dude. The quality of life it's amazing, dude. I've had more fun these past 7 months in my career than any other time. Like not by a little bit. I'm talking about like by a long shot. Like by a long shot. This has been so much fun, man. I leave every show and I walk out and I'm walking to my car like every time thinking, man, I love this. I love this. And I do, man. I love it. I love performing. I love working with these, like, you know, all these younger guys who look, man, super athletic dudes. And I basically can't keep up with them athletically, but I do have something to give as far as like creatively and mentally and as far as like psychology goes and just the ways to look at the business that these people haven't heard. And they're not probably going to hear from anybody else but me.
Is the lesson of the Jimmy Jacobs WWE story or the Jimmy Jacobs story that there's no price you can put on being yourself?
You have to experience all of it for yourself. You know, it doesn't matter how many people are miserable in WWE, and a lot of people are, and they have been. I remember being like, whatever, 21 years old, and I was like, is anybody happy here? You know, doing these extra work, and like everybody's miserable. All my friends there are miserable, and then all the time I've ever known anybody there, they've always been miserable. But you have to go there for yourself, and I had some great times. And let's not say everybody's miserable, but it's a hard place to be okay, man. It's a hard place to enjoy yourself. I learned. I learned that I like being me. I like it. And you know, money isn't everything. There's a lot more out there.
So if someone wants to reach out to you to book you for anything, shows, seminars, whatever it is, do you have like an email or a good way to contact you?
Hey man, if my DMs are open on Twitter, if you just DM me on there, I'm always available. You know, look, man, you guys can see me every Thursday at Impact on Impact Wrestling on Pop TV at 8 o'clock Eastern. You can buy my t-shirts at prowrestlingtees.com/Jimmy Jacobs. On Twitter, I'm Jimmy Jacobs X. On Instagram, I'm Jimmy Jacobs X. Maybe I'll post some more selfies that get me fired from Impact. Who knows?
who would those be with? Who would those be with? Matt?
That'll do it. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Jimmy. This has been a great interview. Thanks for joining us, man. We really appreciate it.
Yep. Thank you, guys.
So, Robbie, I think we got the whole story on why it ended for Jimmy Jacobs.
Yeah, I think it's pretty crazy that when he realized he was going to start being himself again and dressing the way he wanted to dress and maybe bringing the nail polish and that kind of stuff back is slowly when he just started not giving an F is slowly... you know, when this all happened. So it's pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's a great story, and it's great how he feels kind of revitalized, and he's a young guy. He's out there working, and we're out there working too. So make sure to visit our brand new Patreon page at patreon.com/whyitended. Robbie, where is the Robert Strauss brand wrestling this weekend?
So this weekend, you can see me Thursday. I'm going to be for World of Hurt Wrestling in Brandon, Vermont. Friday, I'm going to be for World of Hurt Wrestling in Whitehall, New York. Saturday, I'm going to be ETWA Wrestling in Newport, Vermont, where I'm doing a show and a seminar. And then Sunday, I'm going to be for CPW in Pawtucket, Rhode Island. It's going to be a long 4-day weekend, but this is my life. And guys, remember, don't forget to follow me on Twitter at Robbie E. Impact, Instagram at Real Robbie E. And then, of course, Why It Ended on Twitter and Instagram at Why It Ended. And Matt, what is your social media?
And my social media, you can find me at Matt Coon Music on Instagram and, of course, Twitter. Thanks to our sponsors this week over at StopUsingYourHead.com and also at, of course, the Brian Myers Wrestling School. What's that called, Robbie?
Create a Pro Wrestling Academy in New York.
Make sure to go ahead and check out our sponsors because they help us bring the show to you. And if you want a little bit more, patreon.com/whyitended. And we'll see you next week on Why It Ended.